This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to this week's episode of Safe Room, a horror video game podcast and proud member of Bloody Disgusting's Bloody FM podcast network. I'm your host, Jay Krieger.
And I'm the other one, Neil Bolt.
And this week, we're chasing the ghost in the machine in the cyberpunk visual novel RPG Citizen Sleeper from Jump Over the Age, a one-person development studio run by Gareth Damian Martin. In Citizen Sleeper, the player plays that of, well, a sleeper, a human whose mind has been digitized and placed into a robot body that is owned by the SNARP Corporation. What unfolds is the player exploring a space station called the Eye, where they'll navigate the cybernetic politics of the world, meet various outcasts like themselves, and attempt to survive the Eye's gig economy while orchestrating their own escape from the station. How are you doing this week, Neil?
Yeah. Not bummed out at all in an existential sense.
Not exactly an upbeat game to cover this week, but I think we'll get to the bottom of what makes this a standout, especially after, you know, you obviously brought Norco to the table to chat about a few weeks ago. And, you know, I thought this game would be a good follow-up, even if this is much more leaning into maybe like the tabletop role-playing side of things, more than the visual novel side of things in Norco. But at the same time, I thought this would be a good game that kind of like dabbles in what made Norco such a standout while maybe expanding on the mechanics in a way that felt more, you know, for lack of a better term, gamey, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, in both cases, the thing that helps make them stand out from what they are is the writing. You know, yeah, I think that's very, yes, very clear in both games. Yeah. And this game is, yeah, absolutely superb in that regard as well. So with that, anything is possible. And, you know, that's your imagination can fill in some blanks and the art style does the rest.
Yeah, Citizen Sleeper was one of those games that for me, I don't know how your first hour with it was, but initially I felt that it was a little more overwhelming than Norco was. Mm. And at the same time, in the back of my mind, I was like, oh, fuck, did I make a huge mistake picking this game without looking into it much past just the sort of like aesthetic of it. But I found very quickly that once I was able to sort of like get through that initial, okay, here are all these different mechanics that are going to be in play. But at the same time, like it felt like a game that once you get settled in it, it's a pretty, I hesitate to say relaxing, but it is an experience that I think lets the player proceed at their own pace. Yes. Did you kind of find that to be the case with the opening hour or hours of Citizen Sleeper?
Yeah, I'm going for the record in mentioning XCOM on a Save Room podcast here. And okay, just saying, there was that great mixture of taking your time and this never-ending sense of impending dread. You know, like you had to, it's like, you've got time, but also you don't have time. Yeah, you know, things are happening all the time that you can miss, that can come and cause consequences for you if you don't address them. And all that's ever represented with is like little timer things, you know, little dials that basically fill up as each day goes by. And, you know, I think it's quite fitting that this game is so good at being, you know, for the player, about the illusion of space and time, you know, in the sense that you are there, but you're not really there. You know, you're seeing this overview most of the time of the ship and not really seeing, you're not walking the halls, you're seeing 2D constructs of the characters, and it in a game where you are playing, you know, in that existential dread of being who you are but not, sort of thing, it's, it just feels thematically, visually, all of it just fits together so well in that regard. But yeah, I don't disagree with you in that first hour. It is very overwhelming. You know, there's so much going on. And when you do keep being told, well, this is going to happen then, and that's going to happen then if you don't do this. And it's like, it is hard to remember what to do. But the game is very smart, I think, in offering outs, if you will, without them really being outs. You know, it's like, it's basically one way will do you all right, another way will probably let you off the hook and let you continue a bit further, but will also come with consequences and change, you know, the overall story and how you are perceived. And that in itself, to me, is why XCOM comes to mind as well, because the idea of trial and error and knowing that, yeah, you could still claw your way back from this situation, but there will be irreparable damage done to you or others.
It's funny, you know, something that I've talked off podcast about with a frequent podcast guest that we've had, Aaron Baim, is my habitual issue with continuing to buy RPG books,
yeah,
in terms of like RPG game books, but at the same time never actually playing them. And I buy them because of the fact that, you know, for the most part, the art is fantastic. I love reading the lore of these worlds. I love reading about the mechanics of them, but like getting a group of my buddies to sit around and play an RPG, a TRPG at that, is a very difficult thing to do if, you know, they would even entertain that notion at all. And I'm trying to pace myself and gushing about Citizen Sleeper here, but this game feels like the best middle ground between a traditional tabletop role-playing experience with the elements that we, you know, talked about at length with Norco that we loved so much, which was mostly the presentation of it and the quality of the writing. And, you know, this game feels like something that is more hardcore than Norco. And as we've mentioned, like initially feels overwhelming, but once you get, and I assume it's the same thing with like playing a traditional pen and paper role-playing game, where the first time you play it, it's probably a bit of a clusterfuck. Some people are more informed on the rules than others. Some people are just there because they're buddies that are entertaining this. But at the same time, like when you have a world or you have like a book that is preaching this world and has all these mechanics and is so well thought out and has such fantastic writing in terms of the lore and the sort of ways in which this world operates, like Citizen Sleeper feels like the best medium between those because of the fact that it's able to streamline it, but not at the cost of, I suppose, feeling like a lesser experience, right? It'd be the thing where, okay, we're going to lean more into the die roll mechanics, which is the case in Citizen Sleeper, or we're going to lean more into like player drive, which is a big tabletop role-playing mechanic. But at the same time, like it feels, once you get a handle on the mechanics of it, it feels very streamlined in a way that I feel like I could recommend this game to people that maybe don't even care about role-playing games for the most part. But if I knew that they were invested in like cyberpunk or sci-fi games, like it's able to stand on its own merits, devoid of the fact that it does have these like super hardcore mechanics, but they're streamlined in a way that once you get your head around those concepts, like the first 2 hours might be a little bit slow in that regard, but from hours 3 to 7 and onwards, like, it feels a lot more streamlined because that's how a role-playing game should be. The more you play something, the more those mechanics are reinforced, to the degree that by the time you get to your 3rd, 4th, 5th, 10th hour, it's an afterthought almost, because of the fact the game is streamlined, those mechanics in a way, while still giving you the elements of this game from a storytelling perspective, or even just, you know, a general presentation perspective, that are so strong. And, you know, in terms of a game such as this, I struggle to think about a game that is as confident in adapting those tabletop role-playing game mechanics, and those are being at like the forefront of the experience, in a way that, like, it makes this game such a standout for me, because I literally can't think of another example of a game that is the best of both worlds, a traditional role-playing game from a video game side of things to then the traditional pen and paper hardcore influence that's there.
Yeah, I think because of the way it's presented, I think as well, really does help sort of convey that. It is very much like the digital version of that, because it's simple, it's simplified. As I said before, you know, you aren't really there in that you are kind of having to use your imagination to think about what is there, you know, from the description of the writing to what the characters look like in their situations. You do end up getting a feel for the place because of the words and your experiences, and you actually, in much the same way a book would do, or even a tabletop RPG would do, you do get an eye for what the place looks like in your experience, and it's unique to you. I think that's something that is very easily lost in the world of video games, which is, of course, are very visual, you know, are very much about what you can see, what you can do, that it can be off-putting to go the other way and do this. I mean, there is parts of this, if you're not familiar with that, all these, you know, different things from that world of tabletop, that would be a bit intimidating, confusing even when explained. I mean, like drives are an interesting thing, because at first it just looked like a list of objectives, yeah, and it's like, oh shit, I gotta do all this, like that sort of thing, like that, and you that again just makes it feel very overwhelming, because you're like, I can't possibly do all of this in time, you know, like that. But then you realize, no, you know, the idea is like you are picking, you know, like you are choosing what you are to do and not to do, and accepting that those are the consequences, and that's what makes it freeing, you know, straight away, is because you are doing things whilst the world continues to move around you like that, because the stuff you don't do has its impacts as much as anything you do. And you get to feel it in different ways in the story, which is just a fantastic way of doing it. It's using that very simple rule set to make a really immersive experience.
I think this is, you've touched upon what is my favorite aspect of this game, in that typically, and, you know, it might be a broad statement, but I think, you know, as somebody that's played RPG games for probably at this point 20 years, it's not completely misinformed, but like a majority of role-playing game stories from a video game standpoint, what are you doing? You're saving the world in some regard, right? And I love that this game's emphasis is not that. The story is mostly about, how do you find your place in this world that was supposed to be a new start, right? And I think that that speaks to how well established the overall concept of Citizen Sleeper is, and that, again, talking about just surviving a gig economy, which adds a real survival element to this RPG that's outside of, you know, the predicament of being a sleeper, which is somebody's consciousness that's been uploaded to a cybernetic body. But more importantly, like, the eye itself is filled with people that are just trying to survive from the most base level, right? The fact that it's a cyberpunk setting aside, like, it's just people that are trying to make it to tomorrow or make it to next week. And that presents a really, really interesting world that is incredibly relatable, more relatable probably than a lot of, you know, futuristic settings in games, because of the fact that, like, at that core base level, everybody's just trying to survive, and it's not surviving, you know, the apocalypse or an impending alien invasion or whatever. It's just like, I just need enough credits to buy a meal for myself and my kid or something along those lines. And so from that standpoint, it makes for a world that is intimidating early on, but it makes it at the same time like very relatable on a baseline level, which I think if anything, it allows for a lot of those character interactions that you have to be they come off as very genuine, I think, rather than, you know, here is why you're the right person to save the world. It's more just like, I don't know if it's misguided to say, but like, it feels more like a blue collar way to present the story, yeah. Where it's just like, a lot of the people that I'm helping are just people that, again, they need the credits to either get off world, or they just need enough credits for that next meal. Or at the same time, like the survival aspects that apply to the sleeper themselves, which is the aspect of not only do they have to maintain their hunger level, which if that drops, it bleeds out from your, like, what is essentially your health bar, which your body was made to break down because of the relationship between this corporation that is giving you the cybernetic body, but it's not meant to last unless you continually are taking this medicine over time. And so that presents, again, like this very futuristic predicament of being human consciousness in a cybernetic body. But at the end of the day, that is very relatable. Everybody has to work a job, and most people work jobs they don't like because of the fact, like, what do you need to survive? It's fucking food and shelter. Like, that's the brunt of the human experience. And like, to have that conveyed in a game that's set, you know, whatever, thousands of years in the future, but it doesn't feel contrived in that typical sense when you talk about like sci-fi storytelling or sci-fi worlds, was something that I was very surprised by. Again, I went into this game based off of the aesthetic alone without looking too much into it, which is kind of how I love to dive into games these days. The same way that, you know, you and I have dived into movies previously and we've talked about it plenty of times where it's like, hey, I fuck with this one aspect or I like the way this looks. I'm not going to do an abundance of research into this just because of the fact that like it might click in a way that previous games that have looked like it or have had clear influences have worked for me in the past. And that's how you end up having those experiences that are like surprising, but also rewarding in more ways than one.
Yeah, it really does. I think going into this pretty blind was a great choice, I think, especially because of that, because I really did not know what to expect. And I must say, in the months now where I don't play games that often outside of, you know, for this podcast and stuff that I'm really comfortable with, you know, the stuff I'll play all the time, anytime I do pick up anything new, it has to be, you know, it really engaging me in some way that I'm not expecting. Yeah, I think when I get excited about certain games and think that they should work a certain way, I inevitably end up a bit disappointed when they don't. I think Pacific Drive was a very good recent example of that, where it did not turn out to be the game I wanted it to be, which is fine, that happens, you know. But here, I did, you know, I thought very much, oh, okay, so the visual novel, sure, okay, that's cool, I like visual novels. And then, you know, no, it's a bit more than that, you know, it's more of an RPG. And then, you know, because I'm not as familiar with tabletop stuff, you know, it took me a while to sort of click into gear about what that was with this. And yeah, suddenly it just became very freeing and very like, oh, okay, this feels exciting. In the same way that it used to be, that the transition to 3D was amazing when you could think of open worlds and what you could do with that space and the untapped potential of, you know, all this space, and which, you know, all basically amounts to not much really when you think about it. The real freedom is always like, you know, in systems and mechanics and ways to make things interesting. It's no surprise that when we've talked about all certain games over the years, that there are games that I have definitely found compelling have that, you know, in one way or another.
Yeah.
It's why I come back to XCOM. It's why I love Hitman. It's why I love arcane games, you know, stuff that allows you to play around in a small pool that is just full of stuff. You know, it's got full of toys to have fun with, you know, and this is a very pure, simplified version of that. In that, you know, it doesn't feel like there's much going on. You know, while not even remotely the same kind of game, it's kind of reminded me of something like Into the Breach, which is very, you know, streamlined, very simple version of a turn-based strategy game. But in doing that, it adds something quite immersive and intriguing, and something that gives you something that's kind of missing in those kind of games normally, which is like it's got a short termism that's quite compelling and makes you want to come back again and again and again and again. And like this takes the idea of a role-playing game and maybe a visual novel game and pushes it into a very different direction that makes you somehow much more engaged with it than if it was just like a fully realized ship. You know, like that, it's not, doesn't have to be that, I think. And as much as I love that, because I fucking love big sci-fi ships that you can go exploring around, but the approach to this is a really, really smart way of doing it.
That was the thing, like my initial time with the game, again, maybe that tutorial chapter of like the first hour of the game or the first 2 hours of the game, I was kind of like, I kind of wish I could explore this game to the same extent that I would like the main station, like Mass Effect or something along those lines. But once I, again, like fell more into the groove of what this game was doing and whatnot, I was like, oh, those aspects that I traditionally seek out in a sci-fi game that, you know, takes place in this space opera type of setting, it's like, that would be a disservice, I think, to, again, like intricate storytelling, which is, of course, so imperative to an RPG and a tabletop RPG at that, to the degree that like navigating the eye, which again, you get this basically a strip of the ship, and then you've got these little basically icons that you can shift between. And when you click on one, it gives you the zoomed in perspective of the part of the ship you're at. But more importantly, it's getting to the brunt of the experience, which is like reading various events that can happen tied to a location. So for instance, if I see a salvager ship, then I can click on it and then I get a zoomed in perspective of that salvager ship. But then there's often two actions that can happen. Typically how it is that one is tied to one trait and the other one's tied to another trait. One is often more difficult than the other. And then you're using the dice that you spawn basically at the beginning of each turn after ending a cycle, which is kind of like going back to your home base, recharging. Inevitably, your health bar is going to decrease slightly. Your hunger bar is going to decrease, but you've got a new pool of dice that you can spend, which are essentially your action points. And based on the die number, you have a specific outcome that could occur. Yeah. So, you know, obviously, in typical role-playing fashion, a higher dice roll is going to have a more positive, or in this case, also neutral outcome, whereas a lower die roll will then, of course, have a more negative outcome for actions. But all that to be said, you know, I think that the fact that there are so many options on the station, it allows the player to really, you know, follow their own sort of intuition that they have, as most people have when they play an RPG, but it's past the point of like, I'm going to have a good run or an evil run type of thing. It's more just like logic based. It's like, okay, I've clicked on this ship. I can either attempt to rewire a drone, which actually has like a dangerous connotation to it, where if I fail that die roll, I can inflict more damage to myself. Yeah. Or I could go with what is viewed as like the safer option, which is not dangerous, but it's risky, and I don't get this like specific modifier because of the trait that's established with that. And that's where, of course, like the character class comes in. So the player can pick one of three classes, which is an operator, a machinist, and an extractor. But at the same time, like, I was surprised a little bit that like the classes themselves don't necessarily, I don't know if I want to say like a fundamental impact on the experience, but I think within the opening, let's say 3 or 4 hours, they play a big role because of the strengths and balances of those classes in traditional RPG sense. But like at the same time, what I appreciated about Citizen Sleeper is that the player is free to pursue their given drives, which are again like missions, and they are free to basically modify their stats. That at the end of the day, you know, the machinist, for example, has a strength buff, but their intuition is penalized early on. If I want to, I can boost my intuition, so all of a sudden I don't have that penalty. And like, that's a facet of RPGs that I love. RPGs that give me the ability to boost my class's natural deficits because at the end of the day, it lets me emphasize what I want to be stronger at, which if anything, it avoids that issue I have sometimes with RPGs where it's like 15 hours in, maybe I'm stuck with a class that's dog shit at one specific like aspect of their character. And then all of a sudden I'm faced with all these objectives that are more difficult because of the class I picked. Yeah. Whereas with Citizen Sleeper, again, like it's the type of thing where it's a game that is mostly just focused on the bare bones survival aspect. So they give you the freedom. If you want to pursue a deficit of a character class, you have all the resources to do that. And I think that that level of freedom is important when you're playing a game like this, where it's like, yeah, it might have what seems an overwhelming amount of information going into the game. But in terms of like player freedom, that is not restricted at all. Even if this is a game that maybe like is not the traditional scope and size of a role-playing game or even, you know, a tabletop role-playing game at that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was thinking, going back to the dice thing, I like that, again, it's a very simple thing. It's not doing it exactly like an RPG, tabletop RPG, where you are, you know, properly using dice rolls and really going into the in-depth versions of things. But having their own specific uses as well, like, you know, hacking into the system and only being able to access certain ones with a certain kind of dice. So if you have a one dice roll, that's fine. Yeah, you know, like you aren't really rolling these dice. They are literally like, here are your dice. This is the ones you've rolled already, basically. And then you choose between those to, you know, get the benefit you wish, depending on the action you're going for. But with those hacking ones, where it is very much like a low number is good, usually a one or a two, because that gets you into what you need. So say get some data for someone or access stuff that could get you some extra credits and stuff. I found that like a nice sort of secondary use for it. And I did see like afterwards like a lot of complaints that people are sort of nitpicking on the definition of it being an RPG or not, because it wasn't that in depth in terms of like the systems, like an actual tabletop RPG. It's like, well, it doesn't have to be exactly the same. It put my horror head, you know, into overdrive again. It's like, it's that fucking, it's not horror argument again, isn't it? It's like, like that.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
It's not horror because it didn't scare me or it didn't do these three specific things that I don't like. You know, like, yeah, we get it. It can be an RPG. It is a visual novel, yes, as well, in elements, but I think that's the medium that's being used to translate it from that to that. And I think that's the important part. But it wouldn't be a visual novel if, you know, it would be a visual novel if it didn't have those elements. And it does, clearly. And that's the more important thing. More so than when we were talking, you know, at the start about Norco. Norco is a very different game in terms of how it plays out. Mm. It is very much more a point-and-click adventure than this is, that kind of game. So it takes similar ideas and takes them into a different genre, but you wouldn't call it like a hardcore point-and-click adventure in the same way you wouldn't call this a hardcore RPG. And I think that's the important distinction. It's like, it's fine. It is like that. I think that's why it works.
No, absolutely. And yeah, that notion that like we're going to nitpick certain aspects of this, it's like in terms of adapting a tabletop role-playing game, I mean, at the same time, if you're going to derive those influences, at the same time, like if you just presented something that played exactly like a tabletop role-playing game, what the fuck's the point of, you know, playing a video game version of that, right? So the fact that they're taking those mechanics and they are applying it to something that, you know, still has the structure and the semblance of a video game, but you're taking those concepts and, again, like adapting them in a way that is, I suppose, pure from the traditional sense of like, yeah, die rolls, but you're adapting it in this more unique way that fits this game. And again, you know, I think a lot of the creativity behind this game and the way in which it utilizes dice roll is something that I haven't seen people give enough credit to Citizen Sleeper for, because of the fact that, you know, typically when you're playing a tabletop role-playing game, you get a one or a two and you basically want to launch the fucking dice across the room because you're like, well, what the fuck is this going to do for me other than fuck up my current run or screw over the rest of my party? And I think that Citizen Sleeper does such a good job at taking the undesirable dice rolls and applies them in a way to the, you know, the gamification of it, if you will, that really allows you to not feel like any one die roll is wasted. And at the same time, no one die roll necessarily feels like a major detriment, right? Because again, like there is the survival aspect of this game, but given, I suppose, the scale or the scope of this game, like there's not a great deal of error, I suppose, just because of the fact of how much it would set you back in a way that would almost like ruin sort of the flow of this game. But I want to touch upon that a little bit more as soon as we come back from our break. And of course, we're going to dive more into the presentation, the art style, the really phenomenal music, and also some of the storytelling involved here. But more on that in a moment. And we're back from our break. And the aspect of die rolling that I was alluding to before the break is one of those aspects that I was like, okay, this is the perfect medium between the influences of tabletop role-playing games and, of course, this medium of traditional video games, in that, you know, the high die rolls are always going to be used for the actions that are going to be the most risky, obviously. Yeah. And, you know, you use the middling ones, like your threes and your fours, for actions that have a modifier because of the fact that, you know, it is an action that's tied to one of your class's inherent strengths. For example, if I'm an engineer and, you know, I have points in that, then all of a sudden I get that plus one modifier or something along those lines. So a three turns into a four and so forth. But when you get a one or a two, you're kind of looking at those and you're like, again, what do these do for me? Absolutely nothing, almost, other than fuck my character over because of the fact of their low success rate. But the fact that this game has what is the traditional, like, physical world of the eye, and then, of course, the cyberpunk aspect of it being the digital AI side of the eye, and you can swap between those at will, like, and all of a sudden you go to this AI digital version of the eye, and when you're exploring the ship in that facet, like, all of a sudden those ones and twos become basically like your sixes in the physical world because of the fact that those are required basically to access certain data points that then you get either resources that can be sold, or they allow you to basically trigger these moments when you get chased by this rogue AI unit that's patrolling the cybernetic world and whatnot, which then has, like, again, further emphasizing the story aspect of this game. And that was a really creative aspect to this, I thought, in that it's like there's no wasted die rolls in this, which in my experience with tabletop RPGs, like, those can be the end-all be-all of experiences, specifically with, like, buddies that aren't technically on board with that type of game. But maybe it's the thing where I was, like, able to persuade them to even, like, think about sitting down to play a pen and paper RPG. But, like, those moments where it's like, oh, I've rolled nothing but ones, those can be devastating for more reasons than one. But in Citizen Sleeper, it was very refreshing to have a game that emphasizes survival. It emphasizes player drive and missions. But at the same time, I didn't necessarily feel like I hit the same roadblocks that I do traditionally with some tabletop RPG games. But that speaks to the video game quality of this that keeps things moving in a forward progression more often than not.
Yeah. And, you know, I think if you're going to do something like that with dice, then you have to either make the low rolls entertaining in some way, you know, in that the outcome is catastrophic, or you do something like this where you just make dice work entirely differently to how you would normally expect. It's basically reversing it. You know, it's giving you the outcomes ahead of time and letting you choose what to do with them, rather than, you know, the dice roll being the choice, you know, in itself. Which, you know, it is a simplification, but it's a very important one for this story. As you say, it's like a higher one is great because you can use it for those things, as you say, that are risky, but you don't have to. It's just that you now have the option. It may not turn up tomorrow. Like, you may have to wait a couple of days to get a low roll so you can go and roam around in the AI world as well. So not knowing what you're going to get each day does sort of mean your plan isn't ever set in stone. You may have it in your head, well, I need to do this next and that next, but, you know, you have to basically work what you've got. So the story ends up taking you in places you don't expect, because those dice will give you different options than you maybe had anticipated for that next day. And, you know, I think apart from like a couple of things like the work jobs and things like that, where, you know, you use a bunch of them to sort of make money early on and really get into that. But that's very much like easing you into what the game does, I think, when they do that. And sort of getting in the mindset that, you know, money is important here if you're going to survive and be like that. But yeah, just a word on that AI world as well, that like we're talking actual sort of horror elements here. I think, you know, that rogue AI, you know, and like the visual representation of it and the description of it, it is really beautifully disturbing, you know, like the talk of tentacles and just like this invasive force trying to find a way in, and yeah, you know, the very horror-esque, you know, decisions you have to make to get away from it and stuff. I love that. You know, I thought it just came out of nowhere, you know, like that. And you obviously have this little meter going up to say that it's going to be showing up at some point soon if you keep staying around in this world. So again, even then you have to kind of be a bit hesitant to sort of go into this place, even though you need to and it's helpful and beneficial. It provides its own danger that's very different to the dangers that can appear in the actual reality that you're living in. But yeah, I think that's a lovely layer of that AI.
Yeah, and I mean, the overt horror of it is the fact that, you know, you have your human consciousness that's been uploaded into the cybernetic body, but if that rogue AI has its way with you, what are you left with? Nothing. The husk of, you know, this cybernetic core, and all of a sudden that human consciousness has been completely eradicated, or more frighteningly, consumed, and who knows what an AI is able to do with that. And I think that parallels a really interesting aspect of, like, you know, in the intro I talked about like Chasing the Ghost in the Machine. Like, one of my favorite films is Ghost in the Shell, which is this really terrifying concept of just like consciousness being taken into the future and being put into these cybernetic bodies. But at the same time, like, you then have cybernetic entities that believe themselves to be human, or vice versa in some regards. And it's the type of thing where, while the game, you know, some people might be like, well, it's not really horror, like you said. It's the thing where it's like the game itself, though, again, because of the fact that it's dabbling in this gig world economy, there are these multiple layers of horror, whether or not they're, you know, the traditional genre sense of horror, or just, you know, the realities, the horrors of being an adult, right? That type of thing that we've talked about previously in some games. And one thing that really grew on me with this game was the concept of the eye, and the fact that the station itself, like, really is this wonderful and at the same time terrifying melting pot of misfortune, right? The fact that there are nothing but hopeful souls on this vessel. And most of the time, you know, people that are looking for this fix to whatever their very hyper-specific predicament is, and very rarely are people actually finding it, right? This notion that, oh, this is going to be the cure to whatever is ailing my very specific existence, whether that be the cybernetic side of things or, you know, getting into more specifics in terms of like characters that you interact with. One of my favorite aspects of this game is a relationship that you build with somebody that you meet at what is essentially like the docks, or the blue collar line of working, which is Lem and Nina, which is this guy that's a worker, and he has this little girl with him who you assume is his daughter. And then, you know, through getting to know this person and interacting with them, you realize like, oh, this is somebody that rescued a little girl whose parents got killed, basically, and they've adopted this person. And so you become almost like a secondary caregiver, but that's a byproduct of the fact that there's not enough work to go around on the eye. And so, again, speaking to that gig economy nature of the story and the world itself, and that made for one of like my favorite mini narratives within this world, that, again, when you're talking about a game that deals in the cyberpunk setting, it's not dabbling in like saving the world narrative. It's just, I'm going to help out this guy that I met at the job site because that's my inclination. And all of a sudden you get this wonderful, you know, side missions that have really great detailed writing about how the relationship with this you know, not only this man grow, but also like his daughter and whatnot. And then you have those moments that feels a little bit Pixar, right? Where it's like the robot is able to make this human connection with a human. Yeah. And like that aspect of the storytelling here, again, I think it speaks to a creative that, you know, no matter what you could say about the size of the experience or the budget behind the experience, like that's not a quality of storytelling in games that you get with the, with, you know, all AAA titles or something along those lines, right? It's the thing where it's like, you have this hyper specific world, you have a very specific sort of tone and thematics tied to it that, you know, you could say in some regards might be viewed as being niche, but at the same time, like it's able to derive this level of engagement and this a level of like emotional engagement. That again, you know, when people talk about storytelling in games, Citizen Sleeper is the type of game that I would put at the forefront of it because of the fact that it rivals other forms of media, I think, in terms of world engagement and at the same time, like very genuine storytelling that relates to anybody, regardless of the fact the story is set on a space station in space in the future. You know, the problems of the many are relatable, even if we're separated from, you know, whatever, centuries.
Yeah. So what came to mind here was my experience with like the Persona games, where what I do like the idea of like you can spend time with your friends and everyone ends up with different favorites and things like that. But in those games, you know, the idea of it is still very much gamified. It's like the more you spend time with this person, you know, the more you'll level up their persona, etc., like that, and it'll give you this benefit to do that. So while you're making a choice on one level, you're not really doing it for pure reasons, you know, you're doing it because it helps you somehow in the game as much as it, you know, but you know, there's an inflection of your choice on it. And you know what you were talking about there with them was, in that moment, that story really has no benefit to you. You know, like, doesn't get you money, doesn't help you out, doesn't do anything that would really make any sense to do if you're thinking it in game terms. But because of the writing and the way the world is structured, it becomes a choice that is more emotional. You know, it's more, well, I feel bad. I don't want them to starve. I don't want them to not be able to get work. You know, like, of course I'll take the kid on and babysit the kid for a bit, sort of thing. Like that, it's absolutely fine. You know, I mean, yeah, you get a small reward in terms of the fact you get to eat while you're babysitting, like, and stuff like that. But yeah, I didn't, to be honest, I didn't realize that until like the last time, you know, that I did that.
Yeah, so, same here. Yeah.
So, you know,
literally.
So, you know, that's like that feels like a more natural way of doing things, where it's like the benefit isn't immediately obvious and it didn't even come to mind. And that's good. That's the way you want. And there were so many instances of that where, if you really looked at it in a game sense, you would go, why would you do that? That doesn't do anything. This doesn't do anything. It's like, because that's the point. It's not supposed to be like that. You know, it's using game mechanics where they're supposed to be used, and then allowing the story to breathe underneath that and get to, you know, let you connect with it in a way that it does. And I think the fascinating thing with this game is that every character has something to them. You know, it's like, no matter how repulsive they may seem or how tragic they might be, there's always another side. There's always more to it. There's always extra stuff. And not in a very cliched way of like, oh, don't just judge a book by its cover sort of way. In a very real sense of, you can get a surface level idea of what people are going through or what they are or what they do, but you won't really know them until you get to know them like that. And it's done in such a way that it just happens by circumstance, which again just feels so much more realistic. You know, that you don't just come in with a check sheet of like, I want to know if you do this, like that. What's your likes? What's your interests? How can I woo you? Sort of thing. That sort of thing. It's not that kind of game. It is very much a through conversation you learn, and yeah, it works more like a book in that regard, which is fine. I think that works perfectly for what this game's doing. And that is really where the freedom comes from. Yeah, you know, it's just, you can have experiences that, while they're written and predetermined in one way or another. They are yours because they are your path, your choices that don't end up being, you know, the very much, you know, the moral choices or anything like that. It's just about what you think and feel in that moment rather than, oh, what will this get me?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, while we've mentioned like those survival elements, at the same time, the cost of surviving is relatively low. It doesn't ever become insurmountable, right? Especially like what you had mentioned.
Yeah, I would say it's just enough that obviously it makes it difficult early on to do anything but.
Sure. At the same time, like what you had mentioned, you don't even notice when you get fed when you were taking care of Mina, right? So it's the type of thing where, you know, I was engaging in those missions not out of an abundance of like, oh, I need to eat, so I'm going to do this mission. It was more just like a genuine wanting to continue this narrative arc that you know is not going to last the entirety of the experience, but that's a quality and a testament to just the writing itself. Yeah. The fact that I want to see how far this will go. I want to see what this relationship in terms of like a cybernetic then breaking through that barrier and, you know, the general sort of disdain and discrimination that cybernetics face on the eye when engaging with humans. And so like wanting to pursue something just from a pure narrative reward rather than the traditional, like, I'm going to give you an abundance of cash for doing this reward or something along those lines. Like, I think that is the best compliment that you can give to the writing, and that from the initial start of that engagement, which again, you know, a majority of the actions that you take that are tied to a location, there's inevitably a bar that, you know, you have to go back and complete die rolls at a successful rate so many times before it triggers the sort of next story milestone. I didn't really give a fuck because I just wanted to continue doing it so that way I could see how this narrative plays out, or this vignette almost plays out. And the game itself, like, you don't have to complete every drive that you come across. So the fact that, again, like, there isn't this crazy high monetary reward. At the same time, it's not required to progress through the overall narrative. Again, they have compelling characters. It helps. They also have like really great artwork for each of the characters, which you mentioned are like these 2D, almost like anime style portraits of characters that you meet, but are really, really well done. It's the type of thing where like player choice is rewarded, I think, in a narrative standpoint, rather than just being solely a, you know, cosmetic or just, you know, in-game currency side of things, which ultimately, again, you know, when I'm talking about my habitual buying RPG books and yet not actually playing them, it's a thing where it's like, yeah, I buy them because I love the artwork. I love the storytelling in them and the world building and whatnot. And I'm not getting, I suppose, the traditional reward of a tabletop role-playing game, which is, you know, fucking playing the game with other people most of the time. And yet it still doesn't feel like it is a complete waste of money. Granted, people that really like tabletop role-playing games might disagree in that regard. But for my money, this is the type of role-playing game that I love because of the fact that it takes the best elements of tabletop role-playing games that allow that to be an established medium, and adapts them in a way that makes sense for the medium of video games.
Yeah.
And that was something that, you know, while you've, of course, will play plenty of role-playing game video games, it doesn't necessarily always feel like they're providing the same experience that a tabletop role-playing game would. And in this regard, you know, Citizen Sleeper, I think, clears that mark quite nicely.
Yeah, absolutely does. And I think another one of those undersung sort of things about it is that the RPG elements really do shine the further you go in, where you're surviving less harshly than you were, and you're gaining more freedom just by, you know, the nature of understanding how it works and what you've learned and who you've met to that point. But it doesn't mean that it gets easy, so to speak, at that point. It means that there are decisions that get to be made, and their urgency is added to certain things that, you know, really do conflict you. And, you know, do you deal with this situation or that situation? While one may seem more milder than the other, it doesn't mean that the outcome could end up being worse for that person or for that situation. And I like that kind of dilemma because it only comes from the natural sort of selection you've given everyone in terms of like how who you decide to talk to, who you decide to help, what you decide to investigate, like that. It makes those later day things so much more impactful. You know, like they, it really does just breed into the player's choice beyond the narrative, you know, like in terms of like, yeah, it, the stuff that you've imagined, the stuff that's in your head that really starts to come through in those moments that would make your decision in those, you know, time constrained moments, you know, very much yours and yours alone.
Absolutely. It's the, you know, again, like the type of storytelling that you always want out of role-playing games, but at the same time, like, typically there are very arbitrary responses to any solution, yeah. Right? I think that a lot of the times, again, as I mentioned, like the general vibe of a lot of role-playing games is like, I'm either going to be Paragon or Renegade type of thing. Yeah. And Citizen Sleeper's whole approach to its world and everything is just survival. And it's more leaning into, I suppose, the traits that are tied to actions and whatnot and specific class builds, which then again, like when you're talking about an action and at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, I can either take the risky option or the one that's safer. It leaves a lot of the morality out of it, which I actually kind of like appreciated because it avoids the typical trappings of like either help or hurt somebody that comes to you with a problem type of thing, which again, like if you're faced with those types of predicaments, it almost makes it seem like your own survival is not as important just because of the fact that like you are just making decisions because of your fact. The fact of the matter is like you either need to buy food or you need to buy the next vial that keeps your cybernetic body going. And I like that the emphasis is always like your own survival, but at the same time, the player doesn't feel restricted, I suppose, in terms of the morality of what they're doing because of the fact it's not always thrown in their face, which a lot of the time is like my issue with, I think, role-playing games in general is that it's like, hey, this person came to me and asked me for help. I can either help them or screw them over type of thing. And for the most part, I think Citizen Sleeper does a good job of avoiding that in that it presents you with a variety of personalities, a lot of them quite eccentric, but at the same time, they feel indicative of people that are byproducts of living on the eye that at the end of the day are probably in the same predicament that you are in.
Yeah.
You know, there's a recurring character early on that is really fantastic when you're getting pursued by a bounty hunter. And, you know, it's like he finally catches up with you. He's supposed to turn you into the corporation because you have reneged on your basically indentured servitude to them for the cybernetic body. And what does he want to do as soon as he finds you? He's like, yeah, you know, I can find you whenever I want. I'm just going to go to the local bar on the eye and get shit-faced. You come pay my tab type of thing. And it's like that interaction, again, felt like just very almost down to earth, if you will, despite the fact it takes place on a space station where it's just like, this is somebody that is part of this crazy futuristic world. And yet, you know, their sort of end goal is just like, I'm going to get as tanked as possible and have this sucker pay for it type of thing. But the end all be all of that interaction is not just, I'm going to pay his tab. You could either go along the lines of fighting back against this, or you could just roll with the punches for as long as possible. And like the outcome of that is not definitive, I think, in the same way that, again, a lot of decision-making role-playing games are, which is like, hey, it's either got a good outcome or a bad outcome. Even if you decide to like finally say enough is enough, that character might be like, well, you've seen enough of me. But for now, like it's a prolonged interaction, which I found to be very refreshing. It didn't feel like any character interaction was single serving in a way that, again, like it speaks to like the eye being this ecosystem of personalities and people that are not as fleeting or indisposable, I suppose, as or are disposable as a lot of characters in games sometimes have a tendency to feel like they could be.
Yeah, and I think, again, this comes back to the presentation and not being able to see these people until you've, you know, go into where they are sort of thing is so important, I think. If in a 3D environment where you could see them all the time, it wouldn't feel the same. They would just be standing around waiting for you like that. It's something about the way that this lets you fill in the blanks makes that less of a problem. And yeah, it does just make each encounter feel like a chance encounter rather than just a, or, you know, like they were in the middle of this or where they were in the middle of that. And a lot of the times the writing does do that, where it's like, oh, you walk in and they're doing something like sort of thing. And I like that. You know, I think, okay, it's one of the strengths of limitations. You know, I think, as I was saying earlier, you know, the idea that to go bigger, 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 more detail, more detail, more detail, kind of gets away from where we were starting to go with video games at one point, in terms of like imagination and letting that do the work first. And then, you know, the visual stuff second, which, you know, is ironic to say about a game that is, you know, so visually interesting anyway. But the visuals used in the right way here, you know, like that they're used for effect in the moments that matter, not as, you know, this big showy technical showcase. And, you know, I know we could have gone to it, but, you know, the fact that, you know, while in technicality terms, it's a one-man band with this, it's, you know, obviously a three people really doing the work and making this game work, you know, like that, in having, you know, Gareth Damian Martin also in the composer and in the comic book artist Guillaume Singlin as well. Yeah, they're all doing something really important in their field. I think it's something we actually talked about when we talked about LCB Game Studio and doing the Pixel Pulps, and like having someone who's, you know, a writer, you know, who's written books of that kind really lends itself to those games and makes them more powerful like that, because they've got someone in who knows what to do with that like that. And I think here it is the same, you know, Gareth has clearly got two people in who perfectly suit what he wants like that. He can dictate, yeah, you're perfect for this, you're perfect for this job, and all in, they do such a fantastic job in bringing it together.
It is a game that is very clearly from somebody that has a clear vision for the specific type of storytelling that they want to utilize within this very, you know, at this point, you know, cyberpunk is so oversaturated, I think.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, they have such a clear, unique vision for that hyper-specific and at times niche type of storytelling that it comes across as feeling like an outlier from what you're used to. The fact that on top of that, they're able to get that talent that's able to bolster that very unique vision to a degree that it's like, oh, okay, this is going to help convey, again, what seems to be very niche, but at the same time, presented in a way that's more approachable, perhaps.
Yeah.
That's an aspect, I think, about Citizen Sleeper that allows it to, you know, be that type of an outlier. And again, a genre that is incredibly oversaturated. And unless you had anything else you wanted to add about it for this week, I wanted to finish with just reading a bit of dialogue that really stood out to me. And I think that it stands as a testament to, again, like just how phenomenal the writing is. Because I think when we talk about games and you say like, oh, this game has good writing, sometimes that can almost just be like, oh, well, you know, most games writing is garbage. So when you have something that seems like somebody that took at least like English 101 in college, all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is a standout. But like, I think really this game probably has some of the best writing we've seen in games. So unless you had any other little, you know, points you wanted to mention, I was just going to read this and we could wrap up.
Yeah, no, I'll let you wrap up that voice, because I'll just go on a little diatribe about, you know, writing in games and that. But we could do that another day. So I'll let you do what you do.
So for this, it's basically you've had this interaction with a character. You're leaving their home base, basically, and they're describing the eye as a station. They say, as you walk out, you try to imagine the eye as it once was, a vast machine running smooth and strong, directed by people like Hardin, a vast solemn built machine into which thousands poured from the surrogate systems looking for a new life, the hope of a better future engineered to line someone else's pockets. It's an idea you're intimately familiar with. And if that line doesn't sort of give you an indication of just, you know, the quality of writing in Citizen Sleeper, more importantly, for people that have played Citizen Sleeper and, you know, appreciate the game for what it was, we're getting a fucking sequel sooner than later. And if anything, you know, we briefly talked about it before we were recording, where I was just like, I didn't realize this was coming soon. And while there is not an official release date, it's the thing where, you know, it's listed as coming soon. And I'm really excited to kind of see what the hype around the original and the acclaim of the original game is able to do for the sequel. And it's the type of thing where when you have a developer that, again, is like so clear in what they want to do the first time around, I can only imagine what they're going to do with a bigger budget and, you know, ostensibly perhaps a bigger team or more collaborators in terms of like the sequel and what they're able to achieve with that. But yeah, man, I wouldn't have been able to bring this to the table unless you had recommended Norco to me and we'd had that chat. So I thank you as much for, you know, making me more open to this style of games and whatnot. But we're going to keep things rolling next week within the realm of Cyberpunk in a way with us chatting about Into the Breach, which is a game that, you know, both of us have a great deal of regard for and whatnot. And if anything, since that game was originally released on PC and whatnot, it has been released on iOS as it became a part of, you know, Netflix Games' catalog, which, if anything, I would have never thought that one of the most like hardcore niche sort of mecha games would become part of the Netflix family of games. But I am super happy as somebody that has to proctor tests next week and not have a lot to do to be playing that just out of the eyeshot of students, because I cannot wait to dive back into what is probably one of my favorite strategy games of, you know, the last few years and whatnot. So
yeah,
really looking forward to that, obviously. And yeah, as always, my friend, it's a pleasure chatting horror with you for Safe Room.
Back at you. I'm saying now with no spoilers, there will of course be XCOM references again next week.
I would expect nothing less. So I look forward to those in plenty.
Yeah, until the next time.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Safe Room. If you enjoy the show, please rate us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Safe Room Pod for show updates. As always, our main episodes for Safe Room drop every Monday, but our bite-sized episodes of Horror Bites, our indie horror showcase, drop every Thursday. You can follow Horror Bites' Twitter account at horrorbites_SR. You can join our Discord channel, Safe Room Podcast, to chat with us and other horror fans about the genre we all love. And finally, you can send emails to saferoompod@gmail.com if you'd like to share your thoughts on a game we have or are going to cover. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you guys next Monday.